And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, crappy campers. You've all been very, very bad. Putting hot peppers in Counselor Chris Keeper's petroleum jelly? And sneaking out after dark to drink all the bleach in Camp Chris Keeper's kitchen. I'm loading you all on the bus to Pinehurst Halfway House. Two bits of advice. Don't look Corey Feldman in the eyes. And when you get there, talk to the guy who's chopping wood. He has candy. Dismissed.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Vault of Starling Monster Horror Tales of Terror with special guest star Michael Bailey! Yay!
That was shitty.
That was scary, man.
It's time to break the Muppets.
Time to slash the throats.
It's time to eat the Muppets.
It's time to see the boobies on the Friday the 13th tonight.
So many boobies.
Yes, it's the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. We're all here, the usual crew, Chris Tyler, Sean Engel, and Luke Giaconetti.
Hey.
Yo.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had my headphones in, I couldn't hear what you guys were saying, sorry about that.
Hi.
Holy crap, we're professional tonight.
And...
there's nothing professional about this one.
We have advanced to Friday the 13th, Part 5, and totally randomly, Michael Bailey has forbidden us to do this show without him.
Yeah, we couldn't write this shit.
It's my favorite one. I can't help it. It's my absolute favorite Friday movie.
Double wow. Awesome.
It's even better than the Ice Cube Friday movies.
I was going to say to include Friday and next Friday. Friday after.
No, I love this franchise. I absolutely do. But Heads and Tails, and I can't really tell you. Well, I can tell you. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the first one I ever saw, like all the way through. So, you know, it's kind of like Doctor Who. You always fall in love with the first Doctor you see. I apparently fell in love with the first shitty sequel to Friday the 13th that I saw. So,
I was gonna say I wouldn't say it's a shitty sequel. Actually, I'd say there's a lot of really things that are a lot better than the last one, in my opinion, in this movie. But go ahead.
Yeah, I've got like a whole list of things when we get into it of why I think this is actually one of the best ones they did. Especially in comparison to like other slasher franchises like Nightmare on Elm Street, where when Nightmare on Elm Street deviated from the norm, it was bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, it had some interesting ideas, but it was so, you know, number two is so different and so unlike any of the other ones. It's almost
like, say it, Mike, say what you want to say. You could say it about that one.
What do you mean?
It's so gay.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because I've seen interviews with director who denies any homosexual subtext to that movie at all.
I saw it in the theater, and all I remember about it was the beginning with the school bus, and I don't really remember too much else about it. So maybe I was traumatized during it.
Perhaps.
Well, you know, Mike, it's funny that you said this was the first Friday the 13th that you saw all the way through. This was also my first Friday the 13th, but in keeping with the norm for me, I saw this, my brother and I watched this on USA up all night.
Oh, God.
I don't know that I had ever watched the uncut version, or I shouldn't even say that. The regular
version.
Theatrical version of this until I watched it for this show. Because the other day, as I'm taking my notes, and I get to the gore scenes, and I'm expecting the TV edits. And it's like, oh! Okay, so that's what she looks like with her eyes cut out. I've never seen that before. That's
Yeah, would have been nice to actually see those shears going in there, though.
Yeah, well, you know, there's also now 300% more breasts than there were in the TV version, because you've got three different pairs of breasts all displayed for our edification and enjoyment.
It's nothing like a six pack.
All in different sizes too, so you had variety.
See, I have a theory about that. I think the director was fond of breasts because they're lovingly filmed in this. The way they move, the way they're presented, he thought about those scenes.
Well,
a lot.
What is that? I don't have his name here. I read an interview with the director, and he said that he was tasked with two things on Friday the 13th, Part 5. The first was to have a kill or a scare scene every 7 to 8 minutes. And if you sit there with a stopwatch, like I did, in fact, just about every 7 to 8 minutes, there is a high-interest scene of somebody getting killed or a false scare of some kind in this film. So from a technical standpoint, bang on, good job. The other was to convince us that Tommy Jarvis could become the killer in the next film. And that was what Paramount wanted to do, was they killed off Jason, they wanted to keep it going. Well, let's make Tommy the new killer, because he's got kind of a, you know, basic and not scary-sounding name, just like Jason Voorhees did. And supposedly, had this film been better received by the fans and not people demanding to bring back Jason, 6 would have been made with Tommy as the titular killer.
Well, I didn't think you were going to have Jason not come back in the next one. I think it would, you know, I applaud the studio's idea, because that is kind of a cool concept and very different from the slasher film ideal, where, you know, the killer changes from movie to movie to movie. But in watching like all of the behind the scenes on that really awesome box set that came out a couple years ago,
yeah,
with the first eight movies.
From Crystal Lake to Manhattan is the name of that box set.
And listening to the directors of the first four, and then listening to the people afterwards, it was just like a foregone conclusion that Jason had to keep coming back again and again and again. And but, you see, the idea of Tommy becoming the killer actually appeals to me, which is why, I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but it's why the end sting of this film works for me on that level. It's just like, oh, I can totally see that. And then in the sixth one, they just completely and utterly changed the character to being more of the kind of frat boy Tommy, who's like kind of the all-American hero, where here we have, you know, tortured soul Tommy. By the way, don't fucking touch him, because... Yeah. Oh my God, he will jack your shit up. In fact, that's the theme of this film. Don't touch Tommy, or he will beat the living piss out of you.
Tommy Jarvis was the fucking Bruce Lee in this movie. That one scene where he takes on that person who is, you know, messing with him, and just basically beats the living shit out of him, Bruce Lee style. He doesn't even punch in on him. Yes, he is pretty badass.
Corey Feldman wishes he'd grown up into steroid Thomas Dolby.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, he puts that one guy through a table and then just beats on him until they pull him off. And then the fat, retarded guy from next door, you know, starts poking him. And then he just gets his shit jacked up. I mean, it's just like, holy crap.
Let me make two comments real quick. First off, mad props to our ersatz, Jason Voorhees, for killing those two rednecks and doing the world a favor. Second,
yes.
I believe in the original script phase, this movie was titled, instead of Friday the 13th, The New Beginning, Friday the 13th, Tommy Jarvis Gonna Jack Your Shit Up. I think that was early pre-production stuff, never made it onto posters or anything. No, but I mean, and really, the first half an hour or so of this film, I think, is actually quite good, because of exactly what you guys were just saying. It sets up this idea that, you know, the doctor says, it's amazing his mind isn't fried, all the drugs they've got him on. And they do a good job of setting up all the various red herrings. You know, I think Red Herring from A Pup Named Scooby-Doo was in there at one point. So it really does set up this idea that we've established Jason's dead, Jason's buried off somewhere, or cremated.
They said he's cremated.
Yeah, which is, again, contradicted in 6. But now it's like, okay, we're getting back a little bit to the first film where we don't know who the killer is.
Well,
so that, I thought, like I said, that first half an hour or so did a really good job of trying to differentiate it and make the story a little more important again. And that, I thought, was very admirably done.
And having it be a group of kids that are troubled.
Yes.
Instead of, you know, just a bunch of horny counselors and such.
Yeah, with only a couple of horny, troubled kids.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, so you're going to still have the sex and everything, and you're going to still have the nudity, but I like, felt more for this group of victims than in any of the other movies. Even in 4, where I think they did, script-wise, 4 did the best of establishing the group, but I don't know if it's the way the director shot it, I don't know if it's the actors portraying the characters in a certain way. I felt for these guys. You know,
I would put money on it being the actors. I thought the talent that they had, even though they're no name, you know, off the street, they pulled in a lot better performances in this movie than they had in other movies. Well, you know, there were exceptions. I would say, you know, the black couple, they were pretty stereotypically bad.
Ooh, ooh, baby. Baby.
And,
yeah, but it kept the crapper theme going.
Yes.
I shouldn't have had those enchiladas.
They do not wipe their asses in any Friday the 13th movie. Not one have they wiped their asses. They get off the can and just go with it. Brown stains on their underwear.
I think we could all agree that the 2 rejects from the Wild Ones really deserved killing, just on general principle.
Well, and here's the thing. Those 3 scenes, the 2 greasers who get killed, the 2 people doing coke and about to vote for Reagan getting killed, and then Reggie's brother and his girlfriend getting killed. You know, there's an old saying, and Sean will appreciate this, from Mystery Science Theater 3000, that sometimes a movie is like a big box that you get a small thing in that's filled with foam peanuts. Those 3 scenes are foam peanuts. More than to pad the length of the film, because I think they had about 70 minutes of film and said, we need to get this up to 88 minutes, guys. Can we film 6 more people getting killed? We can.
Well, that waitress can share a rack, and we can get another boob show. Oh, yeah, bring her on in.
Every time I watch this one, I just imagine the ambulance driver, not the ambulance driver, the I don't know. I guess he's a shuttle driver for the kids. He's getting his cocaine ready. It's all set. I just, you know, he's giving his spiel about the weather forecast. I just, in the back of my mind, I hear him saying, "I hate cocaine. I just love the way it smells." Like, that's just me.
But also, I think they did something kind of different in this one, is that the first death really isn't Jason at all. It's the psycho chopping wood. And you kind of feel bad for that. It's like everybody knows that annoying kind of socially awkward person in the group.
On a podcast? Oh, yeah, of course we do.
You're all that annoying, socially awkward guy.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you guys, but yeah.
He is us.
No, it's just you know, he doesn't really know how to fit in. He's uncomfortable in his own skin. You can see that. He kind of, you know, the girls are up, you know, are annoyed with him, but they didn't really ever want anything bad to him. And then this complete psycho just puts a freaking axe in his back.
Yeah.
And it's just like, holy crap.
That's another one that, again, watching it not on USA Network really paid off, where you get to see what's his name hacked to bits, and you see his arm just hanging, just piled on top of him. And, and you know what's funny about that is that we're just going to spoil it right here. So if you want to be surprised, then turn off your podcast and come back later. But Roy is the killer in this. He's the sensitive EMT, not the asshole EMT. The guy who, my first note was Shelly's back, but it's not Shelly. The kid gets killed. He goes on a rampage, kills everyone who is not responsible for killing his son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The guy who does kill his son, we never see again. So.
Well, here's the thing though. It being Roy actually works thematically with the first movie.
Yeah, kid getting killed and then killing the people that they feel are responsible.
Right.
Because those people were supposed to watch his son.
Yeah.
They were supposed to take care of his son, so they have to pay. And when I realized that, I was like, wow, there's more to this movie than I actually really... Either I'm putting more into this film than they thought of when they were writing it.
Maybe so, Michael Bailey. Yeah. Maybe so. My note on the characters is I'm watching these. I've seen the first Friday the 13th, but I'm watching these all for the first time. And my note is characters get douchier each movie. Because in the first movie, I was going, these are all kind of nice kids, you know? They were all polite and helpful. They were out smoking grass and having sex, but they were nice to everybody.
Yep.
And this one, well, they were troubled kids, but it was funny. They were just sort of like the caricature, especially like girl with the headphones.
Listening to the van music.
Who's, how long has she been there? Because her room is like decked out. She's like, well, settled in there.
We all knew girls like that in high school.
I didn't.
Just emanate out from them and line all the walls.
I'll agree with that.
You know, and Violet's death, where she's listening to her headphones, I really like that because, again, a lot of the deaths in the second half of this movie, what's one of my major problems with it is that once we get past the setup at Pinehurst and the introduction of all the red herrings, things kind of just become, to me, fairly perfunctory. People are offed in, you know, fairly straightforward ways, except for Violet. I thought her death where, you know, Jason's in the room with her and she doesn't know, I thought that was actually pretty effective. And since they, again, had done a decent job of foreshadowing that she's stuck in her own world when she's listening to her music. And so I enjoyed that scene a lot where Violet dies. And that one, again, plays well, I think, just from a filmmaking standpoint. You don't get too many of that type of scenes in the Friday the 13th series where someone is, you know, just so blatantly oblivious to everything going on around them.
My friends would call that van music that she was listening to. It had no lyrics. It was just this kind of generic stuff because they didn't want to pay for anything that would be recognizable. So it's like the freaking music you would hear in like G.I. Joe or Transformers.
It was
when they were like in the inner city.
There was some guy in a studio just licensing out hours and hours of that stuff for these movies.
I was gonna say the one thing I did see that was licensed in the movie, and I thought this would be something that you would notice, Luke, was when they first got to the when they first brought Tommy in to meet with the counselor and everything. On the back wall of his room were all these posters. Was a poster of Godzilla versus the Thing, and a nice photo, nice photo of Godzilla. I can't remember what movie it was, but it was him using his atomic breath. I didn't know if you caught that.
I did notice that also back there. This one's for Honeywell. There was a nice black and white picture of John Lennon.
Yes, I saw that. Yes.
I saw that. Now, did anybody see who the lead counselor there was? What other film he was in?
No.
No.
It's Fedora from Last Crusade.
Oh, now I see it. Yeah.
If only Indiana Jones had taken him out with his whip the way it's taken out in this movie, it would have been...
I tell you what, Sean, I appreciate you introducing that because I got to admit, I don't know if this was a set or if this was an actual place they were just filming in, but Pinehurst, the Pinehurst Halfway House, I love the way that this place is decorated. I mean, it really looks like a place that has lived in. It really has a great bit of set decoration on it. Just the little things, like when when Pam and Tommy first walk in the door, there's a sign or a little sticky note with an arrow pointing at the door. It says, make sure door is closed. And it's just little things like that. When they go upstairs right before Robin goes into her room after dissing the stuttering guy, there's a big sign, and you know this must mean something. It says, absolutely no handball in the house. I thought it was as like that really unlike most of the films where the sets are fairly generic camp cabins or generic houses. Like this place really looks like a halfway house, so that helps again sell the parts of this film that work well, which are the real meat of the story as far as the troubled kids and which one of these could possibly be this hideous axe murderer.
And well,
great setup, but they never really take it to where it should have been.
That's what I mean. The second half gets a little too perfunctory after what's actually a fairly strong setup.
Wait, I'm expecting too much again, aren't I?
When we first meet the actual killer, do you guys remember that scene where the sheriff's just talking to himself and it's like something like, I wonder who the killer could be? And he's like, what?
Talking to me?
You talking to me, chief? You know? And I was, that's where I wrote the note in my notes. This is a comedy.
Also, I think one of the things about the beginning that is so strong is that you actually give a shit about the people running the place. I mean, this guy, fedora guy, as we will now refer to him for the rest of the episode. You know, he actually looks like he's trying to make this go, and he's got this bitch living next door that just wants to make his life. And yet, you know, Chris mentioned that it was a comedy. Every line out of that woman's mouth was comedy gold. Oh, yeah. I mean, I have never laughed so hard at an older woman saying "shut the fuck up" on my entire since my mom was alive. I haven't laughed that hard at a woman saying
her and
that,
her son were like characters out of a, you know, 70s Chinese monster movie or Japanese, you know, the family, you know. Shut up, you. I'm making your stew. You like your stew? Yes, Ma. Best stew ever.
The one I always like, and she goes, "You're not so good looking yourself, you know." "I'm not so good looking myself, I know."
Where is Crystal Lake again, and where the hell is this in relation to it?
Because there's a Crystal Lake in New Jersey that has a camp on it.
I'm just saying, though, it seems like they get... How are we getting more and more hickish each one?
Seriously, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and I lived near a pretty, you know, third most densely populated area of Pennsylvania. But when you went 5 miles in the other direction, there was literal, like not banjos, but there were rednecks, and there was the white supremacist farm where
they
that was featured on Dateline.
Yeah.
You know?
Redneck is not a geographic thing. It's a state of mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
All you need is no indoor plumbing, a really vague sense of, you know, hygiene. And I was pretty sure that they were having sex, but I didn't want to think too much of that. So.
Yeah, but, you know.
Yeah, I thought they were married at first. Yeah.
We really liked Mama's stew.
I love her. I also love her with the cops. "I got a bomb on me. You take one step towards me, I'll blow you all sky high."
And then there's the casual flipping the bird as they ride off.
Oh, it's like a Saturday at the Hero household, isn't it? There.
I'm not sure how to take that. Fuck you.
There you go.
Probably had that one coming. But yeah, I mean, I what's interesting to me is that one of the things that's you talk about ridiculous lines. The two greasers have my line. I used to yell this at people in high school. "Crap my ass."
Yes, and another example of them going out to the woods, not carrying any toilet paper and just pulling it right up. This move. Fuck these movies and their shitty, you know, hygiene habits. Yeah, that too.
It really didn't matter that they died. These guys weren't getting laid. I mean, seriously, they were going to show up.
They did drop a nice C-bomb when referring to their potential date, so.
Yeah, I think these guys might have, like, on some level, been into each other.
Maybe.
About taking a dump in the woods.
You've got to think that the stereotype of the leather greaser person is about, by this time, what, about 30 years out of date? Yeah. So, yeah, these people are probably having
some going on. Yeah. Stuff.
This was the 80s, though, and that whole 50s vibe was coming back around this time.
Still.
You know, you had The Outsiders that were a really popular film.
If you would see... But the thing is, I would say if this was made in the 70s, like, you know, like in Family of the Paradise, what does Rod Serling tell us? You know, he was responsible for the nostalgia wave of the 1970s that brought the 50s back. You know, if it was the 70s, I'd buy that. Now we're just getting that awkward, watching too much Happy Days reruns on WPIX stage.
I blame it on American Graffiti. It's sort of like post-American Graffiti to Happy Days was like this huge 50s craze. Yeah. And Grease, culminating with Grease.
The only thing I can say about Grease is, you ever read Stephen King's Christine? There is a great bit where Lee is continually told about the movie Grease, and he keeps saying, everyone tells him, "Oh, the ending is the best part." And it finally goes where he's on the date, and he goes out to get popcorn, and the guy goes, "Oh, what are you seeing?" And he goes, "Grease." He goes, "The ending." He goes, "Yeah, I know.
You know who I really feel bad in this film? I feel bad for Shavar Ross, who plays Reggie. I mean, you know, he gets diddled by a bike shop owner on Different Strokes. Then he comes here and witnesses, like, his brother and everybody he cares about getting murdered horribly.
Poor Gramps. What did Gramps do?
Yeah, exactly.
Gramps is the kindliest old man in the world.
Well, I guess it was lucky that we didn't get to see Gramps get killed on screen. We just saw his body. Yeah. Now, so at least we didn't have to witness. Yeah, and he was, he did buck the trend of being, the black guy didn't die first, so I guess that's a good thing.
And I got the sense that Gramps put up, a fight.
Yeah. Gramps was probably in the war, so not much is going to phase him at this point, And Mike,
no, he probably bit it Mr. Turkle style or not Mr. Turkle, but yeah, Scatman Crothers style in The Shining.
Oh, yeah. Right in the middle of the gut.
Just coming out from around a corner and gets an axe in the back.
Mike, you'll appreciate this. The scene when we first really see Roy as Jason full on in the last reel, when he's chasing Pam and Reggie and he bursts through the door. Which is neat, because to me it's kind of a callback to Jason jumping through the window in part two and scenes like mm-hmm. that. When he busts through that door, all I can think of is the George Reeves Superman.
Great.
And it's like, I'm here!
Any of you guys pick up on the subtle clue that it was not the real Jason?
Okay. Anybody?
Blue triangles and not red on the hockey mask.
That's right, because in the dream he has the dream at the Tommy's dream at the beginning, he does have the red triangles.
The one when he keeps Jason showing up.
Oh, no, yeah. I didn't notice that.
The one where Jason's buried 6 inches under.
Yeah. You know what? It's a dream. You're going to.
Gratuitous Corey Feldman too.
That's well, it's filmed in some Corey dude's Feldman. Backyard too. That's the funny thing about that one.
Yeah, it was on Feldman his break was from in the middle filming of, Goonies.
Yeah, he was in the middle of making Goonies, and they had to do that on a Sunday, so they had 1 day to do it.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's the first thing we see in the movie, and you start to suspect it's a dream because parts of it just don't make sense. Like you said, Chris, he's buried 6 inches under the ground. He buried his hockey mask
with a gravestone with his name just sort of scrawled in it.
He's and got a Leatherman's all and his machete.
I don't know about something. Even Michael Bailey's dogs think it was a little fishy. So
they call him bullshit.
the image that always kind of sticks with me in this is that Jason Voorhees' weapon of choice, of course, is the machete. But there's a couple of scenes in here where he's actually wielding the axe. And so when I was a kid, I always kind of pictured Jason with the axe again, because this was the first one that I saw. So I always picture him with the chopper instead of the slasher. So, it's funny that, Voorhees himself and in this case, Roy as Voorhees, he goes through, and we've discussed this, the design changes as his look gets more refined from film to film. There's plenty of options if you want to dress up as Jason Voorhees. I saw someone from this past Halloween who was dressed up as 8-bit Jason Voorhees from the NES game.
Including a purple jumpsuit.
He had a green mask on, a purple suit, and a blocky pixelated knife. I'm like, that, my friend, that is a good Jason Voorhees costume right there.
Oh, man. No. Just no.
But I really, as opposed to the Nightmare series, where again, when you deviated from the formula and the rules of the movie, it kind of suffered for it. I think here, I'm not saying that Jason is one of those characters where you could have somebody be the killer in every different movie, because he was an icon. There's no really arguing that he was, It really pisses me off when the people are like, yeah, in the 80s, they didn't have Dracula, they had Jason and Freddy, and it's like, on one hand, you're right, but on the other hand, why are you being a douche about it? So, but Jason was one of those characters, I'm more of a Nightmare guy than a Jason, than a Friday guy. I mean, and that just comes down to, I kind of appreciate more what Robert Englund brought to that role. And the fact that it evolved over the films. And yeah, it got really, really silly towards the end. But that first one was scary as hell. Yeah. Whereas Jason, to me, is all about just blunt force trauma. He is, Freddy is the vampire. Jason's the Frankenstein monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really care about a witty line or him to, you just want to see him kill people.
Yeah.
And I think.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, in fact, that when we finally do combine these two franchises in Freddy versus Jason, that's what we get.
Mm-hmm.
We get that exact type of setup where, you know, Freddy is the master manipulator and he's got pulling all the strings. He's the puppet master. And Jason starts out as an obstacle and soon becomes a force of nature. You know, that's what I've always compared, and again, this may be just me because I'm more prone, you know, Jason Voorhees and Godzilla. You know, you're not going to stop him, just you can slow him down or get the hell out of him.
Mitigate the damage, yeah, as much as possible. I always, putting on my FBI profiler's hat, I always saw Jason plays with his prey after they're dead, where Freddy plays with them before they're dead.
He piles them up in a room.
Yeah,
he does a great piling job in this film.
Oh yeah, it's amazing.
Well, especially in the house with the number of people that he kills in that short amount of time, that people aren't just walking upstairs, slipping in other people's entrails and blood.
So somebody needs to do the movie where they show the cutscenes of like as he sets up all his dioramas and cleans up the mess for the next person to come in.
No, don't do that. Don't do the banjo music. Do the Yackety Tetris
sax
music.
Oh,
or Yaggedy Sax. Just do Tetris music.
No, all I can picture now is the scene of him. Of, you know, he's got the, like in this one, he's got the three kids piled up in Reggie's room, or in April's room, and he steps back and looks at them. Now it's perfect. Perfect. All right, I'm done.
You know, nowadays we could make that video game where you play Jason and you get bonus points for setting up a good diorama before people discover the kills.
But when you're getting to this point in the franchise, though, I mean, the first one was very raw, but it's still a really well-done horror film for the time period and the budget that they had. The second one's kind of, I wouldn't say it's a shot-for-shot remake, but it's got, you know, that kind of similar vibe to it, except the killer changes. The addition of 3D in the third one, which actually doesn't really hurt the film, in my opinion. I've never seen the 3D version. I rather like that one because of the cast. But the fourth one, they just seem to be getting more and more complicated with the kids that are getting killed. And here they've got the formula kind of locked down. They just played with it slightly.
Yeah. And generally, as we've been watching these, my opinion has been that the films have improved each time out until now. I liked watching 5 this time more than I have watching it previously, again, because I was actually watching the film and not the cut down version of it. But I can't say that I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed 4. There were elements of this that I thought were better than 4, but overall, you know, I mean, it's entertaining. All I'm asking for from a Friday the 13th film is to sit with my, you know, with my beverage of choice and my salty snack of choice and be entertained for 90 minutes, and this certainly fit the bill. But, it's at this point that I think it was becoming clear that they had to do something else with it, and the changes that come after this film. Again, and I think they realized that because they wanted to change the series dramatically by having Tommy Jarvis become the killer. Instead, we go the route of 6, 7, and 8 where Jason is a supernatural character now instead of a Bubba. So
do you think that's the reason why this show kind of failed? Because they did try to twist around the formula by making another person, you know, the killer, Jason, rather than having the actual character of Jason be the killer?
See, I don't know, because I agree with Michael in that Jason doesn't have much personality. You know, he's got as much personality as a weapon or a bear in the woods kind of thing. He's most of the time he's an obstacle more than anything else. So I don't know. It's interesting to look at it now outside of the context of when it was released and say, well, we'll try to ascertain why this one didn't succeed in a way that the 4 did. And the thing to remember, even the lesser films in this series made Paramount money.
Yeah, I mean, the movie cost $2 million. It made $21 million. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the universal truths of horror is that good horror does not have to be expensive. And you can make your money on pre-sales. We've talked about that many times on this show, that you can make a cheap horror movie, you can sell that movie and make money and keep making more of them. So it's was it people demanded Jason back because they weren't as impressed with the way that our ersatz Jason, again, to coin a phrase, worked here? I don't know. I mean, he was a pretty good Jason Voorhees, despite the fact that he's not actually Jason Voorhees. So I don't know. It's difficult for me to at least put my finger on. I'm interested in what you guys think about that.
All my friends who were seeing him in high school, I think it was just the matter of if he could put it out on time every year, like around Halloween, right? They'd come out and they're just going to go to every one of them because it was fun to see people getting killed. You know, the audience was cheering on all the bloodshed.
Yeah. I mean, these films, and the Nightmare films as well, did this. They proceeded, you know, they started out at a very creative point. They increased creativity, then plateaued and became essentially Geek Show, which again is fine. And if you're making your money, I'm not gonna blame anybody for making money on Geek Show, but it becomes more and more siloed towards the audience.
Yes,
not a fan. If you're not a fan of Friday the 13th, and you see commercial for new Friday the 13th, what do? You roll your eyes. If you're a fan, you knew that trailer was coming because you've been following it online for the past year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all the horror, the big 80s horror franchises are like that. They built a brand following and a brand loyalty, and that's why they stayed around for so long, is the strength of the core story to tell to have a story engine that you can use to build that brand.
And you can't also argue with the fact that, you know, for me, when I was watching these films as a teenager, it was more of, this is where I'm going to get to see violence, this is where I'm going to get to see boobs on a level that I'm not going to get to see anywhere else.
Sweet Christmas, yes. Sweet, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to lie, one of my absolute favorite films growing up is Puppet Master Part 3, because... First off, I love the Puppet Master movies, and that's the best one of them. It's got plenty of violence, and it's got some awesome nudity in it. It's a complete package. You're a teenager right there, you know? and had I been... Because, I mean, I was born in 1980, so I was a young man, very young man, when this came out. Had I been 10 years older, if I was 15 instead of 5, right there, this would have probably scratched that in perfectly. So I'm right there with you on that, Mike.
You see, there were but during this time for puberty movies, there was stuff like Private Lessons and Porky's, you know, to really slather on the boobs.
Yeah,
Porky's.
I'll have to agree with that.
Man that brought you A Christmas Story.
I know.
Black Christmas, Porky's.
You know, Chris, you just said slather on the boobs. I think we might need an explicit tag now.
Oh, yeah.
I think you need an explicit tag from the language that I've been using. I apologize. I don't know what's wrong with me tonight.
Look, let me put it this way. If you can't swear on a horror show, what's wrong with you, you know?
What's funny is Skype just glitched and just cut out the middle
you
of the
out.
Fuck.
That was kind of funny.
Just the middle of the fuck, though. Just like a real, like, blur.
You know, Microsoft is monitoring us.
As a complete aside, this was the film that led to one of my worst fan fiction ideas ever.
Ooh.
Which was Highlander versus Friday the 13th. And the idea is that if you take the Highlander television series with Duncan, there was a character who was very annoying named Richie that always had like a friend or a buddy or like a girl he used to like that was always needing his help with something. So basically the setup is that Richie goes to Camp Crystal Lake to help his friend out. Jason starts killing people. He calls Mac. Mac comes and starts fighting the guy and realizes quickly that the Jason he's fighting is an immortal. Well, it's Roy. Roy was killed in this film and then came back, but because he's just so messed up from the experience, he just went back to being Jason, and that's why you can't kill him. So Mac beheads him after a brief fight, and the quickening summons the real Jason out of his slumber. And then Mac has to fight him. And it's a terrible idea.
No, it's not. It's amazing.
That
actually sounds better than like some of the sequels we'll be getting to.
But the idea was that it was a comic book and that the first cover would be the katana crossed with a machete. That's your visual.
Didn't they do something like that for the Ash or Army of Darkness?
Yeah, something. It was the chainsaw.
Yeah, the chainsaw versus the machete. So
I will.
You're not far off.
I will. We got a chainsaw versus a machete in this.
True. Yeah. True. Indeed. Actually, just aside, Sean, the Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, there were 2 6-issue series that Dynamite put out. Both of them are recommended, I think. They're show fun. I enjoy them. And they do actually something very neat in the second one where they bring back all the survivors from the two franchises, from the Nightmares franchise and the Friday franchises, as kind of like a Justice League team. Not that they're wearing costumes and stuff, but they bring back all the final girls and all the survivors and all that because they're the ones that best know how to deal with Freddy and Jason.
Yeah, and they're the ones who would seem the least want to deal with Freddy and Jason ever again.
But, you know, those are worth tracking down. That's some pretty neat stuff. And the first one was actually based on the unshot script for the sequel versus Jason, which was Freddy versus Jason versus Ash.
And the ending to that one led into one of the deleted or unused endings of Army of Darkness.
Yes.
Well, the one where he wakes up 100 years late. Is that the one we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, like I said, watching this, I was not looking forward to watching this. In that sense, I was pleasantly surprised by the film because it was better than I thought it was, than I had remembered it being. Still not, in my opinion, not one of the better ones of the series. But again, it's Friday the 13th. If you're entertained, you know, I feel like Maximus. Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here? You know, that's all I can ask for from a Friday the 13th film. So more power to it.
I did a little griping in this episode, but I'm going to say this. I think it's like, as a film, the worst of the ones we've seen so far. But that did not get in the way at all of my enjoyment of the movie, and I was enjoying it all the way through. But we're recording 2 shows tonight, and the other movie that we watched was in a similar vein. but both of them I enjoyed thoroughly in a sort of what the fuck sort of way.
Yeah, this and this one and Goes to Hell are the two that I watch the least, just because they just don't.
I'm really looking forward to Goes to Hell. That's just
oh, jeez, don't get your hopes up.
It doesn't cash the checks it writes, I guess.
Oh, after
okay.
Title rights.
I'm going to give you a preview here, Chris. We have a director that has the chance to shoot one of the greatest return of a movie icon shots ever, and completely and utterly through bad editing and bad photography makes it the most boring entrance ever.
Oh,
the end of that film pissed me off. The only interesting thing about Jason Goes to Hell is it's the only movie to have a cast member from the television series that had nothing to do with it and in one of the movies.
Well, I will also say the beginning of that film is
the beginning's amazing.
Okay, I keep forgetting that that's the one that opens the way it does, and the thing that everybody would always talk about, and they finally did it.
Yeah,
but
we'll get to that when we cover Jason Goes to Hell.
Oh yeah, we still have to get through Zombie Jason and Carrie versus Jason and New York versus Jason, and oh yeah, a lot of stuff.
Wow,
forward to the next set here. You know,
yes,
I grew up with, so I'm champing at the bit. But, you know, and again, like I said, it's not that this is... Let me do it this way. If you're listening to The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, and if you're hearing me say this, you are, then you'll probably have an evening's worth of entertainment watching this with your adult beverage of choice and your a couple of friends over hooting and hollering at the television.
Yes. Oh, yeah, guaranteed. It's not, it's... Guaranteed. It's entertaining.
It's not Citizen Kane, and you're not expecting it to be, but it is, yes, a good 90-plus minutes of watching the most obnoxious, despicable people in film history get brutally murdered. So if you can't get behind that, what can you get behind?
And I'll tell you this. Thanks a lot, Space. Thanks a lot, Space Obama. Also have much better, you know, throat being slashed with a machete than Citizen Kane ever could hope to have. So
yeah, it would have been nice to have seen it, though, instead of how they zoomed in. Just saying.
And I agree.
Could I agree one person just say Rosebud before they died?
Yeah, Rose.
Although, you know, the hero's point, this film has a decent amount of gore in it, but there are some shots that are cut away just before the money shot or...
Oh, yeah.
Wait, you don't see it. And this was one of another film, like pretty much every film in the series, where they were threatened with an X rating by the MPAA if they didn't tone down the gore. Now, in this one, it was the sex and the violence. So, I mean, the sex scene in the woods was originally shot to be substantially more graphic from a sexual standpoint.
Well, and I'm sure they shot it anyway, just to be safe.
Somebody's real, these home collection exactly. Somewhere. You know, there stories. I've always heard stories that the grindhouse theater guys and the porno theater guys used to all the they would.
That's
take,
not a theory. That's a fact. Yeah.
I've never seen one of those loops, so I can't say for you know that I've seen that where they would take all the best gore and nudity bits and just make loops of that, and that'd be what they'd show to their friends when they were getting high and shit in their theaters. You know, it's just nonstop, no context. You know, sex and violence. It's like, man, that sounds like it would be a blast. Maybe I shouldn't say that since Microsoft is actively listening to us, as Sean mentioned.
And the NFL.
Say the word blast.
And the NFL, yeah. And baseball is spying on us with the satellites.
It's true.
They got everything. Your address, your phone number, what size baseball hat you wear, it's all there.
I just want to mention I'm feeling particularly Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I'm wearing my basket case T-shirt right now.
You son of a bitch!
Yeah, with Belial peeking out of his little home. Someday maybe we should tackle some Hen and Lotta.
Oh, we have to tackle Hen and Lotta.
Basket case. Actually,
Bailey, what other horror movies have ever tickled your fancy? We got to get you back on here sometime.
I have no,
you
seen
don't
nowhere
me
near
as a big horror fan.
Yeah, in fact, it seemed like when I was talking about the Friday films on Facebook, Luke was very surprised.
I definitely would have. Look, if you had come on and said, you know, I'm a big fan of the old Fox superhero show Mantis, I'd have said, you know what, I can buy that.
Hey, you be nice to Mantis.
I am being nice to Mantis. That was appointment viewing for me when I was in high school. Don't get
Martian
me
Manhunter, yo.
Yeah, oh, but yeah. That and that Mike Bailey, you know, the man who on his own promo says, I'm a terrible geek. You know, busting out all this stuff about Friday the 13th, the Nightmare on Elm Street. It's like discovering that, you know, the guy that you've been friends with for years on end and you've only connected because you both played basketball. You know, you go home to his house and he's got Transformers lining his shelves. Like, how come you never mentioned this before?
I don't know, you think I was a nerd.
the thing is that I am not as well versed. I'm always the guy that knows a little bit about it, but I always have friends that know so much more. Like the guys I hung out with in my early 20s, they were the ones that saw like the really obscure stuff. And it you know, and it also depends on what you define as horror. I mean, you know, when I walked in and my friends were watching Cannibal Holocaust.
Which is coming up if you'd like to do that one.
No, thank you. I think I'll skip that one. But no, it's just, I like horror in that it's my version of going on a roller coaster. I hate roller coasters. Physically going on a roller coaster scares the shit out of me. But the thrill you kind of get as, you know, you're going up and going down and getting the scare factors. I mean, I like Nightmare, obviously. I like Friday. You know, a lot of the other kind of cheesier ones that were around this time period, you know, like the Halloween films that I've seen. But it's also like The Ring, the American version of The Ring. When that girl came out of the television set, I freaking climbed the window behind me. I was like, holy shit, I've never seen anything like that before. So it's just, surprised. For me, it's kind of funny that Luke was surprised, because when you really think about it, of the horror franchises of the 80s, Nightmare and Friday were the most superhero-like.
Yeah.
I could see that, yeah.
It's like, why didn't I like G.I. Joe? Well, you know, I was a kid in the 80s, so there you go. There's step one. But they were a bunch of guys who were teaming up against an evil force. They all had code names, and they all had special powers. So when you know, it's not too much of a leap from what I was already into. I mean, the only thing I'm surprised I'm not into is professional wrestling. Got it.
Wrestling is straight superheroes, especially in the 80s.
But it's just, you know, like Phantasm. But I also like the spoofs. There was one, and I forget what this movie was named, but I saw it once because I was one of the. We had HBO. Growing up, so I got to see a lot of interesting movies at 3 o'clock in the morning when everyone else had gone to bed. It was a spoof movie, and I'll never forget the beginning because it was like two guys going to kill Dracula, and every time they put the stake in Dracula's chest, it's like a garden hose of blood would just spray them for several minutes at a time. And it was also the movie where you had. Like, they were walking through this town, and it says Transylvania Acupuncture, and Pinhead walks out, and he looks at the camera and goes, I don't care what anybody says. This hurts. And then walks off. And I've never been able to find the title of this film. Or anybody else who has seen it.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, because Pinhead and the whole Hellraiser thing was late 80s, so that may be, well...
Well, 80, wasn't Hellraiser like 86, 87?
Yeah.
Something right. Yeah, about from there, so. There,
yeah. But my older sister Jane was into Stephen King and stuff like that, too, so I was exposed to a lot of that growing up as well. So, not so much Dean Koontz, because I didn't really care for the Dean Koontz that I read, but... So it's just like horror is just one of those genres that I really like. I'm just not as well versed in it as I would like to be. Like you guys were throwing out some movie titles where I'm like, wow, I have no idea what they're talking about, but boy, does it sound interesting.
That's one way to put it.
Hold on. Let me see. Somebody else vamp for time. I'm terrible at it.
Well, I do know that Phantasm is coming up in the foreseeable future. Which I know Hero and I are chomping at the bit for that one.
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie.
That'll be interesting to see the progression of that, because I've seen the first one and part of the second, but I've never seen 3 or 4.
Michael?
Yes? Yes?
The film that you're looking for is called Transylvania Twist.
Thank you!
It was Roger Corman in 1989,
ooh.
And stars people you've never heard of. But that is the film that has the I don't care what anyone says this.
And just since you mentioned Roger Corman, I just gotta throw this out there. I found last night someone has finally put out the Roger Corman produced biker movie Naked Angels,
which
has my friend Howie Lester in it. He was my film teacher back in film school, and then he's became good friends with me, and now he's a violin player, fiddle player in my band. I was just at a party at his house, but he plays Skid in the biker gang in this movie, and he actually has all the best crazy, he gets all the Dennis Hopper lines in this movie, you know, he's a Dennis Hopper style biker, hey man, you know, Dennis Hopper from Apocalypse Now type.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Well, like I said, I was glad to at least watch the regular version of this film finally in my life. I've got that particular monkey off my back, I suppose. But you know, I think anyone listening to this show would probably enjoy it. Anyone else have any final thoughts or other thoughts?
Body count. Can't forget body counts.
Go.
Oh, all right. I forgot to take a death count on this. We're up to 29 right now.
Bitch, please. That's why I'm here. It's my job.
That's what I do.
That's what I do. So, and we're just going to talk about total on-screen deaths or implied deaths. Let me see. Let me do the tally here. We got 22, depending on the vagaries of the perception that's going on here.
In this movie?
Yes.
22 people dead in this movie?
We have two in the dream sequence,
that almost
not counting
doubles
Tommy.
Our count. This
What's
is unprecedented.
Yeah.
Yes.
That one, brings our count from 29 to 51.
Yes. Two in the dream sequence, if you want to count them. Not counting Tommy, who also died in the dream sequence, but that was a dream, so we won't count it. And then we have the whole crux of the issue, which was Joey, a.k.a. the fat kid. That's how I wrote it down. And then we have 17 more bodies get stacked up.
Wow.
You know, greasers and cocaine users and titty flashers and whatnot.
Yeah, that's right. And, sometimes just two at a time.
Yeah, and the titties?
No, or Jason victims. But
oh, yeah, yeah. And let's see. Then we have Roy, of course. And then we also have Pam. If she died or not, we don't really know because that thread never really went anywhere. So, however you want to count it,
a firm 51.
Oh, a firm, yes.
This definitely has the highest body count of the series by a decent margin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't even think about that while I was watching it.
That's why I'm here.
When you want to have a scene, an exciting scene every 7 to 8 minutes in a 90-minute movie, you got to have a lot of people getting off.
Yeah. You know?
And then they just pile it on at the end. You know, dead people just start showing up, and it's like, oh well, I'd have liked to have seen the fedora from Last Crusade get a railroad tie driven through his head. You know?
Yeah.
Would have been neat.
How can you say that Transylvania Twist doesn't have anybody in it when Angus Scrimm plays the tall man in the Phantasm segment of this?
It does have Angus Scrimm, and Robert Vaughn is in it as well. I was beyond that. I couldn't recognize anybody. But, yeah. So.
Angus Scrimm. Just one of the greatest horror names ever.
Yeah, true. You know what the real tragedy in this movie was? Oh, yeah, that's a great name, too. But you know what the real tragedy in this movie was? That chocolate bar got cut in half and wasted.
You can sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Welcome to Amazon. I love you.
Visit our brand new website at TwoTrueFreaks.com.
Two True Freaks is always spelled TwoTrueFreaks. Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com, where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook, too. My name is spelled Scott Gardner.
You can friend me on Facebook, too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? Thanks for listening, and join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
And this is your Uncle Don saying good night.
Good night, little kids. Good night.
We're off?
Good. Well, that ought to hold the little bastards.